Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. I'm Mitch Light, joined by Ari Wasserman. Today, it's National Signing Day. Ari, how you doing, bud?
Should we just like cut last week's episode and run it again?
Why? Because nothing happened?
No, because we had the entire South Carolina podcast already.
Yes.
We talked 30 minutes about South Carolina, and here we are.
Yeah, so there was some drama today, though. Like we didn't expect much to happen, but we're going to talk South Carolina because Nicholas Harbor went down to the wire. There was Oregon talk. There was South Carolina talk. Jaden Rashada signed or did not sign. Jaden Rashada committed. We did not expect that.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't expecting
there were happenings.
What was that?
There were happenings. I don't know if drama would be the right word, but things significant things happened.
Grace Renner was tracking Harbor because she was going to write a story if he signed with South Carolina. There was some back and forth drama there. Shane Beamer, we'll get into it in a minute, but Shane Beamer basically, I think someone tweeted about it too, but told Grace he got a text in the middle of the night that had him not feeling so comfortable about where South Carolina stood. So we're going to talk about those two storylines. We're going to bounce around the country to some other happenings. We will turn our attention to the class of 2024. Got trivia, mailbag, if there is time. So where do you want to start, Ari? It's got to be Jaden Rashada or Nicholas Harbor.
Let's start with Harbor first, because we've talked a lot about Rashada and Harbor's a pretty big get. So, to say the least.
One thing I learned from you, Ari, sorry for the interruption there, is when I started working with you and covering recruiting, you know, with your background covering Ohio State, and we kind of pride ourselves on this podcast being more about strategy and theory. Just learned about I just followed college football recruiting as a college football fan. It's like, oh, you just go get the best players and you recruit your backyard, but you get the best players. And just the geography of it, and you said Ohio State going in areas where the local team might be struggling for whatever reason, like Texas or Southern California. And I just remember when Shane Beamer was hired, he constructed his staff and probably looked at the landscape. Sure, they want to recruit the Southeast. If you're South Carolina, you're going to recruit your own state. You're going to recruit Georgia and Florida. But maybe there's an opportunity there in the Northeast a little bit. You know, Pete Limbo was on his staff. He was a head coach at Lehigh and some Elon, I believe, and so I was like, okay, that sounds pretty good. And they've done pretty well. They got a quarterback in 24, Dante Reno from Connecticut. And they have some guys in the D.C. area. But to me, this is just really the fruits of that, their labor of trying to recruit the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, going in and get a five-star from Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and I will say that I'll give Maryland a ton of credit because, you know, I think that the thought process for Maryland has always been own the DMV and you know, you could build a really good program by getting the best players in that area of the country. And I don't know that Maryland has, you know, succeeded in that. I bet you if you ask Coach Loxley that, you know, how to grade himself, like, do you think that you've become the go-to place for prospects in that area? I mean, he might get some mixed reviews. But the one thing I will say is that when there's a five-star prospect in D.C., like, Maryland gives it all they've got, you know, and you know, with Rakim Jarrett and some of the guys that they've gotten in the last few years, I mean, they've had some big-time signees. And, you know, Maryland didn't make it easy on anybody here. So they get some credit from me. They didn't get them. But, you know, when you start going up against Oregon and, I mean, I guess now South Carolina's in that mix. You got an SEC program up there. It's just hard to close.
They had an in-home visit.
I think he went to Maryland like 70 times.
Yeah. So,
and part of that is because you can get in the car and drive there. It's not that far. But, you know, I think going into Tuesday evening, the thought process was that Harbor was going to end up at Oregon and we were going to have another Oregon signing day, you know, party, you know, another Dan Lanning smoking a cigar, you know, type situation. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that Oregon also got Roderick Pleasant on Wednesday, who's a top 100 player out of California that USC really wanted, and he's a corner. So, you know, that was still a great day for Oregon to add another top 100 player to their class. But, you know, to me, the story of the day is South Carolina's continued growth, not just with the way that they finished last year on the field beating Tennessee and Clemson, but now it kind of, you know, ending with an exclamation point in last year's class and getting who I think might be the most talented physically five-star prospect or player in the 2023 cycle. And looking up into the 2024 cycle, they already have three top 150 players committed, and they might get another top 50 offensive tackle out of their own state. So, you know, South Carolina's got a ways to go before they're, you know, competing to win the SEC because of just the sheer number of players that are going to places like Georgia and Alabama and LSU. But when you talk about direction and, you know, reason to believe in growth, you know, that's what you pay a coach for. And, you know, the long discussions that we always have, and, you know, I think one of the biggest stories right in the first 6 months of working together that I wrote was how do you build a program? And the number one reason why Clemson has been such a unicorn in that regard, Mitch, is because, you know, when coaches get it going good early, they leave for better jobs. And when coaches have it going bad early, they get fired. And nobody's ever been given the benefit of the doubt, you know, long term, the way that maybe even Jim Harbaugh has now, you know, with two consecutive wins over Ohio State. So, you know, Shane Beamer doesn't strike me as somebody who's just going to bolt. So, if, you know, this could be the beginning of something not, you know, I don't know that I think they're going to turn into Georgia, but this could be the beginning of another SEC team doing a very good job and becoming a top 15, top 10 program. And they have the infrastructure, they've got the fans, they've got the geography, they've got the conference, like everything, you know, the financial situation when, you know, the mega conferences arrive. I mean, it's all there for them. And it seems like they have the right coach. And, you know, I think the one thing, Mitch, and, you know, stop me from rambling, but that I've tended to do in the past is overreact to individual commitments. But you tell me, like, how big of a deal is this for you?
Well, I'm going to pull an Ari. If I just said what you said, I have a feeling you might come in and say, how many top 100 guys did South Carolina sign?
Yeah, well, that's not the point I was making.
How many did Georgia sign?
Yeah, sure. I just said that they weren't Georgia and they were going to be Georgia.
Right. I'm half kidding. I think it's massive.
But what I do think is when you plant a flower in your garden and you see the first leaf sprout up, you don't go, well, it's not a tree yet. I mean, you see the potential to grow into something. And I'm not saying that South Carolina is going to turn into an oak tree with rings in the middle, you know, but there is growth and there is improvement in a short amount of time there. And when you're paying a coach, you know, and extending him the way that South Carolina did, you know, it's nice to get dividends, big or small. I think it's huge.
Yeah, no doubt. And he is a really exciting player too. It's any five stars important in South Carolina. We wrote this today. I think it's maybe like their seventh five star of the modern recruiting era. They got, you know, they've had some Jadeveon Clowney, obviously an exciting player. Offensive linemen are important. Defensive tackles are important. They had Jordan Birch, but he's a guy that it's just, he is going to be in highlight reels. He is a world-class athlete, wants to run in the Olympics. Interesting thing, Grace Rayner talked to Shane Beamer and he said they're going to play him at wide receiver. He was a tight end / wide receiver in high school. And part of the reason is because they want to kind of protect him from track. Like Shane quote was like, I know football is a physical game no matter where you play, but maybe having him block rush ends, you know, defensive ends isn't the best thing for him or for us. So he compared him to sort of like the way Florida used Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts was listed as a tight end, but was used as a wide receiver. So I think he's going to be an exciting, you know, exciting option for them. He's going to run track at South Carolina. That's another thing for South Carolina to beat out Oregon for a kid who wants to run track. You know, Oregon.
Does Oregon have a really good track program?
Phil Knight.
The founder of Nike?
Yeah. They kind of, you know, track background there. Like the national championships are in Eugene every year, I believe.
I didn't know that Oregon had I don't know the hierarchy of track programs. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't know if they're like win national championships or anything, but I know Oregon has a very good track program. So yeah, it's just in, you saw, I'm sure you saw the clips of Shane Beamer reacting in his office. They filmed him. He felt pretty good about it that he was going to get him, but you never know until they announce. And you know, you complimented Maryland for being in there. But as we know, there's no, there's not much of a consolation. I would say there's no consolation for being the runner up in this, in the transfer portal era. There is a consolation for sometimes for runner up, it gets transferring home. But just the look on Shane Beamer's face, like he offered him as a freshman or a sophomore when he got the job.
Yeah, it was like it's one of his first two offers, right?
Yeah, he recruited him when he was the tight ends coach at tight ends special teams coach at Oklahoma. He was the that was his recruiting area. He went in there to go recruit someone else and met became aware of him. So yeah, I just
The interesting discussion there, I guess we could take 2 minutes on is you know, a lot of people like viewed him as an edge rusher. But it seems to me that receiver slash Kyle Pitts is the perfect example of it because really Mitch or like a perfect example of like where he might project well to, because I mean, there are not a lot of people on the face of the earth who are as large as him, who can run as fast as he can. Like we're talking about a man who has a potential to rush the passer in college, but also runs Olympic qualifying track times. And like, think about that. That's like the NFL's, you know, NFL's dream. So, you know, the first person I really thought of when I thought about that was that clip of DK Metcalf running down Buda Baker in that Cardinals game a few years ago, you know, after the interception. It's like that's the type of athlete that South Carolina is getting. And I think Kyle Pitts is a good example of just athleticism, speed, and size that can really, you know, change some stuff there. But yeah, I can't stress enough how incredible that is. And I'm very curious to see if South Carolina is going to sign a top 15 class in the 2024 cycle. They finished 16, a few decimal points away out of 15. And for that program, you know, especially considering the fact that they're really hanging in there in the state with Clemson in 24. So, you know, all those old South Carolina teams that were awesome did it with South Carolina talent. And that was before Clemson was or became what they are now. Imagine if they do that again with Clemson being who they are. You know, I think South Carolina is a legitimate threat to the region. And it's super exciting if you're a Gamecock fan.
And we talked about this last week. Recruiting at a high level is nothing new for this program. They had the number 14 class in 2019, 17 and 11, 15 in 2012, 20, 19, 20, 25, 21, 18, 21. So they've been a top 20 recruiting program. And again, as we've mentioned, they have taken advantage of some really good in-state talent to prop up their class. So that's what makes this even more interesting. Kind of what you're just getting at, like Kyle Pitts was one of the more impactful college offensive players in recent years, I'd say. Is that fair? I mean, maybe.
Yeah, especially one of the most unique, probably.
Yeah. So, but what position I think the coaches will tell you, like, is the, if you can rush the passer, like that freaks who can rush the passer impact the game more than probably wide receivers. So, it's interesting that this kid, I don't know if he's Nicholas.
Yeah. Harper's. And we'll see what happens, you know, when they get him on the field up there. But, yeah, I mean, and to go into DC and get him, it just great recruiting all around and hats off to them.
Yeah. So, we will be talking more South Carolina, and check out Grace's story. It's filed today. It's live on Harbor. Talk to the coach, talk to, Shane Beamer as well. So, okay. Jaden Rashad, something we did not expect to happen, he committed to Arizona State. And if you have not seen any official tweets or anything from Arizona State, they basically cannot do it because he's not signing a national letter of intent because he already signed one with Florida. And we believe you can't sign two in one cycle. So you don't have to sign a national letter of intent. You can just show up and he will be at Arizona State. So, happy for the kid. It's over, I guess. Everyone knows what he's been through. Seems like it's a pretty good landing spot for him. There's a relationship there from when Kenny Dillingham was at Oregon and his dad, Harlan, played at Arizona State. It is our belief, and people have kind of reported this, that NIL was – there's basically no factor at all that there wasn't NIL. You know, surely if he goes to Arizona State and has a good career, he will make some money off of his name, image. Did I say NIL? NLI, whatever. I might have misspoke.
NIL.
He will make some money off of his name, image, and likeness. It's a competitive quarterback battle. I think Doug Holler contributed to that story we wrote today. I think they might have 6 scholarship quarterbacks. I'm sure they won't have after the spring. Drew Pine from Notre Dame is one of the transfers in there. So glad to see, I guess, the drama's over. Hope the kid can have a normal college career now and just kind of we'll see what happens. He's a top 100 player. He's not a no doubt about it. Plug him in. He's going to be great. Like most quarter, you know, that's pretty much the case with most quarterbacks there. So it's over.
It is funny because when you think about all the stuff that has happened in his recruitment, like the winding road that you usually have followed with him, he just signed or picked a school on National Signing Day. So it's like he still arrived with a spot in a Power 5 conference at the end of the road, like a bunch of his peers. That said, Arizona State wasn't much of a factor in his recruitment at all during the meat of it. And maybe that was financially based, or maybe it wasn't. And the one thing that I hope for Jaden more than anything is that he can find personal fulfillment in, you know, where he is and what he's doing. Because it does seem like there were different landing spots during his recruitment, whether it be Miami, Florida, or now Arizona State, and, you know, what he truly wants to do with his own life. So I am excited to see how it pans out. I'm certainly excited to see how he develops there. And it's funny because I was really high on the Kenny Dillingham hire.
You and, made it happen. That's,
yeah, I'm his agent, but yeah. I think that that's a nice step in the first class, right? I mean, not even this first full class yet to get a top 100 player at the quarterback position. And, you know, he had Dante Moore committed to Oregon at a certain point when he was the offensive coordinator up there in Eugene. I think that this is good for both sides. And, you know, if it gets back to football, like there's money in Phoenix. There's people who, you know, he'll find his way to financial freedom if he does his part and plays well and gets, gets as good as I think that he could be through that development. And, you know, Arizona State is certainly hurting for a guy to perform at a level at that position. I mean, when's the last time they've had a really great quarterback? Was it Jaden Daniels that one year before he committed to or transferred to the LSU? And even then, yeah, I don't know if he was great Daniels yet.
Maybe his freshman year was.
Who's the really tall guy that played for the Broncos? Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
You know?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
One thing about this, and not that like if he went to Florida or anywhere and he was making signed a huge NIL deal that a coach is going to play him because he has that NIL deal. But like the fact that he's just going there, as you called him, just sort of a normal recruit, he can develop. Like it's not if he redshirts and takes time to develop, it's like it's not there's like not going to be that added pressure. Like there's this kid who signed this big NIL deal. Why isn't he playing? So he can just sort of just. He's always going to have this attached to him. But like I said before, hope he can have some normalcy. I want to go back to one thing about Harbor because I had a stat that I love my stats.
Yeah, you got your stats, pal. Yeah, go ahead.
So Harbor is the third. I don't know how good Washington, D.C. high school football is. Obviously, there's some teams there because, you know, Harbor plays at Archbishop Carroll. But Harbor's the third five-star prospect from D.C. in the last four recruiting cycles. Joining Rakeem Jarrett in 2020, Maryland, and Caleb Williams, 2021, signed with Oklahoma, obviously at USC now. I went back quickly. I don't think there was a five-star in the previous like 6, 7, 8 years. So I don't know if this is just a happenstance, but something, you know, it's good for Maryland. They got Jarrett. They got one of the three, but obviously if there can be some better players coming out of D.C. again, but it could be just...
I mean, when you think about how big D.C. is from a land mass area, it's a very small place in comparison to states. So that in and of itself, like having that many good players in a short amount of time is kind of remarkable. And, you know, I kind of just view D.C. as part of the DMV. And right. I know that crosses over three different territories, but it's all kind of one general area. And it's like you could be in the state of Virginia, but also live in D.C., right?
Yeah.
Or like exist in D.C.
I'm sure a lot of the kids who go to high school in D.C. probably live in Virginia or Maryland too.
Some of and how far is Baltimore from D.C.? Like a half hour?
I think like 45, further than that. 45 yeah. minutes. Yeah. Depends
so
on.
So it's kind of, you know, all one area to me. But yes.
I took my AP English exam at Gonzaga High School in D.C. on a school trip. Did not
you
go
did?
Well. Yeah. I was on a school trip. And that was the week we had to take our AP English test. So a bunch of us had to go to Gonzaga High School.
Was it proctored or did you cheat?
I wouldn't have cheated if it wasn't proctored. I don't remember what it was like. I don't know if you can cheat on an English AP test. I don't really remember what they're all yeah. about. All right. Got some bullet point notes here, but I thought I was onto something. Like I noticed that only 4 of the top 10 schools in the rankings are SEC schools, Alabama, mm-hmm. Georgia, LSU, and Tennessee.
Yep.
But that's no big deal. Only 3 of the 10 were last year, 4 of the 10 in 21, and now 6 of the 10 in 20. Where the depth comes in is the top 25. It's 9 it's like, of the top 25 in 23, 10 in 22, 9 in 21, yeah. 9 in 20.
So it's like that's the funniest thing that you think about, like you just said. South Carolina has traditionally recruited well. If you think about South Carolina's reputation in the SEC, they're still like the 20th most talented team in college football, and they stink in the SEC or have stunk. So it's like that's also too like Tennessee, I think, one year had signed – this is the stat that blew me away. They signed the number 10 overall class in the country. I think it was 3 years ago, and they were number 7 in their own conference. It's like, yeah, but the depth of it too. It's like, you know, most conferences when you get – like into the Pac-12 and maybe some even the Big Ten programs, you know, for the Big 12, you know, the bottom half of a Power 5 conference are finishing in between 40 and 70. You know, that doesn't really happen. I mean, where did Vanderbilt even finish? Were they last?
In the SEC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where did they finish sure. overall? You don't know that off the top of your head?
It was down from last year. It was like 50 or something.
Okay.
It was like 31 last year. It's 50 this year. That's going back to South Carolina. Another point we need to make is their late season push. I mean, it's obviously great for this year's team, but how much we can't quantify this, but how much does that mean for this program going forward? Like how much easier Shane Beamer sell? Like does Nicholas Harbor go to South Carolina if they don't beat Tennessee and Clemson? We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah.
But I'm sure it's making their pitch on the road this offseason a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, look at the direction. Here's the stat, Mitch. 12 out of the 14 teams in the SEC signed top 30 classes.
Yep. So, I mean, that's sort of like we talked about a little bit of a tangent here. I brought this point up a lot. When Sam Pittman took over and had immediate success or relative success, he was taking over a talented roster that had just mm-hmm. bottomed out.
Yeah.
So they just needed some normalcy, some leadership, and some good coaching, and that's what they got. And it was, and you can argue the same thing in South Carolina. Shane Beamer came in, there was talent on the roster, and you know, took them a year, maybe a year and a half, and then they started playing better.
I think in Sam Pittman's first year at Arkansas, they were the 19th most talented team in college football. And then the year before, they were so yeah, they were terrible the year before. Yeah, insane stuff there, buddy.
Okay, so we looked at this earlier about how many programs had an average player rating of 90 or above to just kind of see about the talent.
Is this a trivia question?
No. 15 teams in 2023 had an average player rating of 90 above. 12 did in 2022, and 15 did in 2019. I went back 3 or 4 years. So I don't know if that's saying much.
How many were this year again?
15.
5 are in the SEC.
Okay. So two teams had 94 or better. 3 did last year. So again, not totally sure what this means, but just throwing out some numbers. Here's something I thought was kind of funny. I was thinking about it. The 2022 playoff teams and quarterback signees. Number 1 seed, Georgia, did not sign a quarterback. Number 2 seed Michigan did not sign a quarterback. Number 3 seed TCU did not sign a quarterback. Number 4 seed Ohio State stole Lincoln Kindholz from Washington at the last minute. He's number 189, but was a three-star throughout much of the process. So,
yeah, that is kind of an interesting happenstance. TCU would have signed one if they
tried.
If things would have gone differently on Wednesday, but they were the runner-up in the Rashada sweepstakes. But, yeah, that's – and all of them are in different situations. Like, like Georgia has like 3 5-star prospects on their team.
And they have a 2024 kid already.
Michigan has a returning starter and is all in on Jaden Davis the next year.
Right.
TCU, I think, probably needs one the most. And they might go get a few, at least for depth in the transfer portal. And then Ohio State has a quarterback battle between Devin Brown and Kyle McCord. So they're all kind of in different places. And I think that's just a reminder that, you know, I personally don't think you need a quarterback in every class. And some coaches will say, hey, we need to have 4 scholarship guys on our roster at that position at any given time. We don't want any San Francisco 49er situations where Christian McCaffrey's throwing the rock. And then others think it's a waste. I mean, I think it's a waste of a scholarship. If you ever get to the point where you need to play your 4th quarterback in a season, it's probably all's lost already at that point anyway. So, yeah, but I like the thought process on there. And then, of course, in the portal, you can kind of mend depth issues quickly if you need to.
The final top 100 count. Now, one player, as we should have mentioned this earlier, Deuce Robinson is uncommitted. 5-star tight end from Phoenix is not signing this week. USC, Georgia, Texas, Alabama also wants to play baseball. So we'll see what happens there.
I'm hearing and I've seen that the Major League Baseball draft could have an impact on his decision.
Yes. Now, he told Grace, his dad told Grace, in the story she did about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that the thought of not going to college and just playing baseball, they had not even talked about that yet. Like, so I don't know if that's a...
When's the Major League Baseball draft?
June.
June?
It's last year. It was the week after the college baseball season. I know you don't follow this at all. This is just one of the crazier things. For years and years and years, the Major League draft took place on a Monday in the middle of the baseball postseason while teams were often playing. Like, guys could be pitching or playing shortstop and they could be drafted in the first round while that was going on. Is that kind of weird?
What? Like in college?
Yes. So the major league draft was like on a Monday in June, and it was usually the weekend of the super regionals, which is the final round before the college
World Series. Of the college baseball season, because it's also in the middle of the regular season. It'd be like if the NFL draft were held in October.
Right. Well, that's because they want to get all these amateur players who've just finished their college and high school seasons into the minors already. So that's why they do it then.
Like
you play high school baseball and you get drafted, you just go right to the minors or whatever.
And it's like right away.
Right away. I mean, like, you could just, like, college coaches will tell you it's like the cruelest, like, football season ends. You know, some of the guys might be
Before you got to do anything.
Right. Like baseball, they get home and you got a team meeting and guys are either going to play summer ball and you won't see them till the spring, till the fall, or they've signed and they're going to play minor league baseball.
You're just going to Rancho Cucamonga just overnight.
Exactly. Exactly. Building some apartment and go eat at Bennigan's.
Did you know, I don't know if you know this, cause like I have a very, loose relationship with baseball. I'm in a dynasty baseball league with a buddy. And he's the one who kind of keeps up with like the prospects and stuff. But my first internship out of, or while I was in college, was working for MLB.com, and I was the minor league specialist.
Seriously?
And I lived in Fresno, and my job for the summer was to drive to all these minor league places and write feature stories about prospects for MLB.com. And they were usually features and stuff, but like there was a, have you ever been to Fresno?
No, I have not.
I lived in Fresno because Fresno Grizzlies have a AAA team that's the affiliate of the San Francisco Giants. And they play in this beautiful stadium that's like a carbon copy, or like at least done by the same architect that did the Giants stadium, which is one of the best stadiums in baseball. And I was just driving around through San Francisco and, Rancho Cucamonga, I went to Inland Empire, all these different places, like going to minor league, and like one, I don't remember what team it was, but Trot Nixon was making a rehab appearance in AAA. And they sent me to this minor league game to write about how his rehab was going for MLB.com. And it's like, I thought baseball was really cool back then, but I knew really nothing about it and still don't.
I would love to read that story. Does it exist anywhere? God,
I've tried to find some of these because it was online. God, it was terrible.
Can I go back and edit it? I want to go back and edit it and repost it.
Well, I mean, I was 17 years old, or what, 19. Like, what? Do you think I was writing like Wright Thompson back then? I mean, I was just trying to learn how to do the job. But it, like, do you ever go back and read your stories in The Hustler and go, wow, I should have won a reward for this?
I have gone back recently and read, and I'm horrified by certain things, and certain things I'm like, hey, that wasn't too bad. But that's actually, in all seriousness, that sounds like a good job to kind of cut your teeth on journalistic work.
The thing is, I got like paid. Like, they gave me a ton of money, and then they were paying. I had my dad's old Honda Accord with me, and they were paying me 25 cents or 30 cents back in 2010 or 2009. You're probably
driving hundreds of miles.
And they were reimbursing my mileage, and I was driving all over California. I was like, I was getting checks for like $2,000 on mileage reimbursements on a car that might have been worth $11,000. And there was a casino 5 minutes away from my apartment, and I was living there. I had no friends. I had no relationships with anybody. I was there alone for the summer. So what did I do? I went to the casino all the time during my free time and just played poker. And that's kind of how it started. And I remember one time it was called Chachansky Casino. And it was like out in the middle of nowhere and there was no cell service. And I went and I played in a poker tournament and I was playing it for like 14 straight hours. And my parents couldn't get a hold of me because my phone wasn't ringing. And my dad said like they were in the car on the way to Fresno to come find me because they couldn't figure out where I was when I called them.
Fun story. I can see that. As a parent,
I've panicking.
When you get trouble getting in touch with your kid, you kind of panic a little bit. Well, that's a good story. Okay,
I can't believe it's been like 15 years since then.
Yeah, so I don't know how we got down that road. Final, because we started talking about Deuce Robinson and uncommitted, baseball. Then we started talking baseball. Okay, final top 100 count. Alabama signed 14. Georgia signed 12. Texas signed 8. Oklahoma and Ohio State signed 7. LSU and A&M 5. USC, Tennessee, Clemson, Miami, Penn State signed 4. Oregon signed 3. Florida, Notre Dame, Ole Miss signed 2. And these schools signed 1. Utah, UCF, TCU, Colorado, Florida State, Kansas State, Auburn, UCLA, Michigan State, Nebraska, Arizona State, and South Carolina.
So if you take Alabama and Georgia, and then the two or three teams that had 7. Is it 2 teams or 3 teams? 2 teams?
1 team at 8 and 2 teams at 7.
Okay, so that is 6 total teams or 5?
Yes. So it's 48. 48 signed with 5 schools. So that's
48. Yeah. Yeah, half of the top 100 signed with 5 schools. Now, the thing that's cool is that a few new schools are in there. So Texas A&M still has its, you know, 12 or whatever or 11 or 15 of the 15 they signed a year ago. No, they signed 18, so they might have like 14 or 15 that are still on A&M's roster, and now Texas is getting 8, and you have some, you know, maybe that'll spread. It doesn't always have to happen in one class, right? Like, it could happen if the teams that are in that mix change every year. That might be a nice way to spread the stuff around a little bit. So, you know, good for Texas because they signed a really, really good class this year, and, you know, A&M had a smaller class and, you know, kind of went back down to earth a little bit. But the one thing I got to say is, if you think that Alabama is slipping or that this is Georgia's sport now and Alabama's just not going to be heard from again, they signed 9 5-star prospects this past year.
A record. And in theory, they could sign Deuce Robinson, right?
A year after missing the playoff.
Yeah.
So, or weeks after, but the same year they missed the playoff. And then the year before, they lost in the national championship game, of course. But, like, if you don't think that Alabama... Do you think that they will win another national title under Nick Saban? Because I do.
I do too.
I think it might be next year.
I'm more concerned about the quarterback situation.
I'm not.
Okay. I'd feel better if Bryce Young were coming back.
Yeah, in Georgia's quarterback situation, they got Dan Marino back there next year?
I don't think so.
So, I mean,
okay.
It's very easy to play quarterback at those schools. I think
it's easier, yes. It's easier. Yeah. I mean, what hell, Georgia won it with a walk-on, right? Anybody can do it.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Bounce around a little bit here. Oregon got Roderick Pleasant today, one of the four top 100 guys who was uncommitted. I think he's 79 now. Big loss for USC, Southern California kid going to Oregon.
And Oregon jumped into the top 10 on that commitment.
They did.
So they're number 8 now, which is a nice little.
Yeah, I had Tennessee at 8. So did Tennessee drop to 9 or is Tennessee 7? Do you have
Tennessee is 9.
Okay.
Notre Dame finished 10th. Man, that stunk because people thought they had a chance of finishing in the top 3. Notre Dame is the only team in the top 10 that signed 0 5-star prospects.
What's USC?
USC is 14? 12.
Okay. You don't need to do the class calculator, but. The only thing that can happen right now, barring any sort of late, like get someone switching schools, getting out of their letter, is Deuce Robinson going to USC. Would that be enough to get them in the top 10? How close are they to the...
How about I just do it real quick?
Okay. Because if he goes to Texas or Alabama, Georgia, that's obviously Texas isn't going to catch Georgia, I don't think. So...
Yeah, I think we're basically at the end here. And USC is really pushing hard for Deuce Robinson and... You know, the thing that we have to mention, too, is that they got the kid...
Walker Lyons,
who's a fringe top 100 player who was committed to Stanford. He's a really, really good player at the tight end position. So, you know, I don't think Deuce cares about the depth charts at any of these places because he's that good. And Georgia has like 97 tight ends on their roster. But I think it could potentially make a huge difference. So if you add... Deuce Robinson into the mix. It brings their total up to 292.1. And 292.1 would be, yes, it would make them number. Oh, they could jump up quite a bit.
See, it's funny you say it because
Jump up into the top 7 if they do that.
Because South Carolina did not move up after getting Harbor, I don't believe, because there was a huge gap between 15 and 16 at the time. Is South Carolina still 16?
South Carolina is 16.
I bet they're really close to 15, right?
Very close to 15.
Because I did this the other day because I figured they'd move up, and they didn't. They went from a distant 16th to a close 16th. So, okay, so that might change. I need to hold off entering all these numbers in my spreadsheets.
Yeah, just give it some time, maybe a few more months until Deuce comes through. But, you know, the thing that I think is interesting about USC, and it's kind of like the same problem that Ohio State has, it's like, you know, Ohio State signed its fewest amount of five-star prospects in a single class in like 5 years and only had 20 commitments, but their average player ranking is 93.62. But if you take a deeper look at Ohio State's class, 3 of their 7 top 100 players are receivers, right? So, like, you wonder... You know, in the same year when Alabama and Georgia combined for almost 30 top 100 players, Ohio State really only signed 4 non-receiver top 100 players. So there's a huge talent gap. Like if you extrapolated these classes into 3 years, if Ohio State played them in year 4, after 3 classes like this, with this disparity, they get their butts kicked. And so like I look at USC and I think, they signed a really good class, number 12 overall, and they've got, 2 5-star prospects, but one's a receiver and one's a quarterback, and the third best player is a receiver. Then you have an edge and a linebacker, but like they're not addressing their needs, and they have to have more elite talent on the defensive side of the ball. And Tackett Curtis is a number 108 overall.
They just dropped
a really good player.
I know there
wasn't a top 100, and Braylon Shelby out of Texas, the edge rusher, is a top 100 player. But if you go back, you know, past those guys. Then there's a stark drop-off at the bottom of USC's class. I mean, they have a defensive lineman ranked 9-11, defensive lineman ranked 869, and another defensive line, 477. I'm not saying that those guys stink, but like, it's just not where it needs to be in order to win a national championship or win a playoff game. And I'm concerned about my status in this race with Andy to the playoff. Yeah. I was a quarter away, and now I feel like I've never been further.
Yeah. Now they did. They added three Power Five guys in the portal: two from Washington, two from Florida, one from Washington State. So they did
two starters from Florida, right?
Yeah, two starters from Florida, and the Washington State guy was a starter as well. And then they added the number two receiver in the Pac-12 in yardage and yards per game from Arizona. So obviously they've done well in the portal.
Well, everybody's bagging on Iowa, and rightfully so, on Wednesday because Kirk Ferentz announced that they weren't going to be making any staff changes. Surprised that USC's defensive coordinator is still there.
Yeah, and Antonio's written about it a lot. A lot of it is sort of personnel. They just don't think the personnel was there next year. If they don't improve a lot, I'd be surprised if he's back after next year. It's sort of like, I get why they made the move. I think the popular move among the fans would have been made, and the acceptable move would have been to make a change. But, you know, coaches are loyal, and I think it's fair to say their defensive talent just was not good. Like, some of the transfers they brought in, they're bringing guys that weren't playing. They weren't starters or all-conference caliber guys at other schools. So, like, what makes you think that you're going to just plug them into your lineup and they're going to make a big difference?
Well, that's my thing. It's like there's two different discussion points here. It's one, your personnel wasn't very good, so your team struggled because the personnel wasn't up to snuff. But what has he done on the recruiting circuit or the transfer circuit to address that?
Right.
And which is nothing. So it's like, what is going to happen? The clock's going to strike midnight again next year, and they're going to get shredded.
Right. It's so, kind of circular logic, or that's the right term, but like, their defense wasn't good because they didn't have good personnel, but they don't have a reputation for being a good defensive team, so they're not attracting those defensive players they need to get better.
But the right defensive coordinator attracts them.
Right.
And if you can't, then you got to find somebody who will.
Right.
So, you know, maybe I'll be wrong about Alex Grinch. We'll see. But, like, I just don't know. Like, your car's broken down, so you can't get mad at somebody for missing work when their car doesn't work. But when you find out that they didn't do anything to fix the car or find alternate transportation to get the job done and they don't show up to work, they're still an asshole for it. So, like, it's just that
maybe maybe you're not paying them enough to fix their car.
Yeah, I don't know if that's an issue.
Okay. This was noteworthy. You mentioned these two guys in your kind of what to watch for story last week, that the Harris twins, did you see they split up? Andrew Harris is going to UCF and Michael Ayers is going to Maryland.
I cannot believe that happened, but
parents,
yes, I did see it.
Parents have got to be pissed.
I mean, I just don't know. I wouldn't have. I mean, I don't have a twin, but like, I would just like, that's my guy. I can't believe they did it.
Imagine if
you were in the womb together.
Imagine if you had a twin. They'd probably be
Have a buddy that is a very good friend of mine, and we always say we were in the womb together, even though we weren't. I don't know why we say that, but every time I see him, we just slap hands and say,
Bill Landis?
It's not Bill Landis. Landis doesn't return my phone calls anymore.
So. Really?
No.
Wow.
Or he does. He'll text back, but if I try to FaceTime him, no go. He used to pick up. He doesn't pick up.
Well, probably like a dad. He looks, he's not sleeping. He's disheveled. He's not as handsome as normal.
I don't think he cares what he looks like when we talk.
Okay.
Landis, if you're afraid of being, you think you look ugly, just know that's a safe space when I FaceTime you, all right, bud?
Okay. I like this. It's a cry for help. Not a great day for a new Stanford coach, Troy Taylor. They lost L.J. Martin to BYU, flipped, and Cameron Brand flipped to Michigan, two top 500 players. Then, obviously, I don't know how serious they were for Walker Lyons, a one-time Stanford commit. But we know that rebuild is going to be more difficult than normal because of Stanford's inability to attract, or not attract, to admit transfers there. So, not what you want to see from a new staff. No one's judging them on this first class because it's a new staff, but to lose two top 500 guys on signing day, as I would say, not ideal.
Yeah.
No comments?
I think that Stanford should be awesome, and they're not. And I think maybe it's easier said than done, but
that is feel like we will we're going to tease our recruiting project coming up.
I don't even remember where I ranked them.
Yeah, so we're ranking recruiting. We're getting 8 staff members to rank recruit the Power Five, which is now 69 teams, 1 through 69, on how well they should be, how well they're like their potential to recruit, and we're including the coaching. It's not like when program ranking, sometimes we just say blank slate, no coach. This is we're factoring in that Deion Sanders is at Colorado. We're factoring in that Nick Saban's still at Alabama. So,
do you remember where you ranked them?
Pretty high.
Okay. I did it pretty high.
Yeah. Where'd you have him?
30.
I didn't have him quite that high. But yeah, it's a program that has historically, or last 10, 15 years, they have always been able to, I think, I don't know if this was just anecdotally from following it, seeming like they've got, their classes are top heavy, like because it's Stanford, and they'll sign some bunch of top 100 guys. Like, I don't know if they have the depth of some other really good classes, but they can always find 3 to 4 to 5 top 250 guys that want to go there. And that has not been the case as much in recent years. And they always had, they had good run of signing good.
A lot of people say that academics are a part of their decision-making process. And it's like the amount of money it costs to go to Stanford and the amount of money you'll likely make if you graduate from Stanford is such an insanely attractive sales pitch to the right person. I'm surprised that they are dormant in recruiting. I'm not saying they're going to sign a Georgia class.
They had a top 20 class a few years ago.
Yeah. No, I'm saying I'm surprised they don't sign a top 20 class annually, because you want to talk about NIL and being tempted for financial reasons. It might not come in the form of a JanSport bag filled up on your porch, but there's a lot of financial value in that offer.
Yes. Ryan Grubb is staying at Washington, flirted with Texas A&M, actually went down to Alabama. According to most, he turned down Alabama, wants to stay there, wants to be a head coach. It's a great situation at Washington, working with Michael Penix Jr. My question to you is,
how much is he afraid of the SEC?
Now, how much of a boost is that to Washington recruiting? Now they go on the road and say, look what we've done in year one. And our offensive coordinator said no to Texas A&M if he was offered. No to Alabama. I think some of you
staff continuity is important for sure. You know, and you know, saying no to Alabama, that's something. You know, if I wanted to be a head coach, I would probably work at Alabama.
Yeah,
it's like the number one place to work if you want to be a head coach. But
if Ryan Grubb's a West Coast guy,
and they do what they did again last year, and Penix takes another step forward, the guy's got a rocket for an arm.
Yeah,
I could see that, and you know, the confidence that he has and what's on that roster and what they could accomplish is certainly a feather in the cap.
Yeah. And Kalen DeBoer, they've worked together, good friends. Now, so today Washington got a commitment from 2024 four-star Austin Mack from Folsom, California. Interesting thing about him, Ari, he's 356 in the composite, but he's 53 in the 247. Hasn't been evaluated by everyone. So I've heard Christian Capel thinks that our Washington writer thinks that he could be a potential five-star down the road. Like he's a guy that
sounds like a story I don't want to read.
Yeah. So a really good get there, and you know, they found I don't know if he's that much under the radar, but he's Stanford and Oregon and offered. Last year they found an under the radar guy in Kindholz and had him until the last minute, and then
Lunch money taken from him.
Exactly.
But the state of Washington has 3 top 100 players in it, 6 top 125 players in it, in the 247 rankings. In the composite, they have 2 top 100 players. So depending on what you think about when doing the rankings, if you think 24/7 is on the ball, they think that it's a deeper state than the composite would indicate. And I'm curious to see, especially with Jason Brown, the 4-star running back out of O'Dowd. I mean, this kid's got offers from Alabama, Georgia, Texas, and you know, Washington's right there in the thick of this. I would just like to see, and I've been giving them crap for years, and it's just like, go close, man. Just go close it.
Yeah, I mean, and they've got a lot of momentum right now, clearly. Yeah.
And I saw Sam Heward.
Cal Poly.
Transferred to Cal Poly, which didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, his high school offensive coordinator is the offensive coordinator there now. And I think he just wants to play. You know, there's so many, most schools now that you could transfer to, it's hard to get guaranteed playing time. And he really hasn't played. He's played minimal snaps in his 2 years. So we'll see what happens there. A couple notes. Most 2024 commitments, Georgia and Florida State have 9 already. Florida State, blue chip ratio, 7 of their 9 commitments are blue chippers. Good sign moving forward. LSU has 8 commitments. Our old friends at Texas Tech, always off to a fast start, with 7, and Notre Dame with 7. I believe Notre Dame got off to from a number standpoint and a quality standpoint, got off to a really good start last year as well.
Did you look at Georgia's class yet?
It's good.
How many players out of the 9 commitments are top 100?
Do you know?
I do, yeah.
7?
8.
Holy. Can we say holy shit on this?
Yes.
Eight of the
and
nine.
They, and they have no commitments, really, from wait, any of the five stars. Do they have a kicker? I don't think they don't have a kicker. I don't know.
I looked at one class recently because I was looking at the blue chip and they had a kicker. So, like, that doesn't really count.
They have eight top 100 players committed out of the nine for 2024.
Is the quarterback in the top 100 the kid from Massachusetts?
I'm looking to see. No, the kid from Massachusetts is 124.
Okay.
And they have 10 commitments now because they added a five star on signing day.
Yeah.
Alice Robinson, the fourth, committed. Out of IMG, the number 13 overall
player. Yeah, can you guys just leave us alone? It's 23 signing day. We don't need any five stars committing on.
The lowest player rated in the class is 438, and then everybody else is in the top 125. And the kid from Connecticut, the quarterback, is number 124, and Georgia is very much involved with Dylan Raiola. So this does, you know, Mr. Overreaction here. This does have the nuts and bolts of the greatest class of all time.
Are you calling it? Call it now.
I don't know. Still got nine. They've got to get 10 more top 100 players in this class to outdo.
Will they beat Texas A&M for the best class ever?
No.
Okay.
I sure think about that? No. You made me call it. They have to get 10 more top 100 players, and it's like they already have 10% of them. Yeah. So, like, I mean, at a certain point, it's got to slow down a little bit, right?
And the state is better. The state has more top-end talent next year.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. Of the nine or the eight top 100 players that they have committed right now, none of the top four players in the state, all of whom are five-star prospects, have committed yet. And there are, I think, there's eight more top 100 players in the state that haven't committed yet. So, you know what? I mean, like, and the thing that I wrote and you edited, but, like, they haven't done that great in their own
Did
state.
You say I edited it? That's kind of, that's what I do. You, I read you and edit. It? I read it.
I said you read and edited it.
Yeah.
There are 16 top 100 players in the state of Georgia in 2024.
Weren't there three last year? Is that what we talked about?
I think
about
there
last
were three,
week?
And only three of those guys are committed to Georgia so far. The top four in the state are all five-star prospects, and Georgia already has eight top 100 players. So, like, they, you know what?
You're calling it.
I mean, like, it's all right there. I mean, and they're really, really hot right now. So I think it's possible that Georgia, yes, I'm calling it.
You know what? I'm only half kidding here. It's a pretty good year to be a first-year coach at Georgia Tech. There's a lot of leftovers on the tip for Brent Key and that staff.
Good luck.
All right, so we are going. We don't do this very often. We're not done. We got more to talk about. But a school we were going to talk about, I'm teasing to next week because we have a very special guest. We're talking Wisconsin football next week.
Dude, you're teasing.
Temple. Yes, with Jesse Temple. So Wisconsin is a program to talk about in recruiting now. This new staff,
yeah,
Luke Fickell, they are getting it done. Next year's class, they're not just going to...
They have like 17 scholarship quarterbacks on their roster now?
Yeah, they've got a lot. They've got a lot. Plus the guy, the 24 kid, Mabry Mattower that you Mature. Wrote about. Mature, yeah. Excuse me, that you wrote about. The Trevor Lawrence lookalike.
He looks just like him.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Wisconsin next week with Jesse Temple.
And
so,
we don't mean like he plays like him. His face looks like his face.
Yeah, he's got long blonde hair too, right?
Yes,
yeah.
That's why I think that's part of it. But like I wrote a story about him, and in that story, people were like taking pictures with him in the airport because they thought he was Trevor.
Yeah. All right, a few mailbag questions. I thought you handled this well in your written mailbag this week, so I would
like
to address it. Yeah, yeah. You do good work.
Thanks, guy.
This is from John R. There's so much misinformation and lies surrounding NIL deals. As an upset fan can tweet out that a University of Oregon NIL collective paid a high school football recruit $5 million to sign with the Ducks, and the media treats it like fact. While one might think the Oregon Athletic Administration would push back, but given NCAA doesn't care, they let it float around since it actually works positively for the school in luring other athletes out of high school and the transfer portal. So what do you think is the duty for the media and accurately reporting on NIL deals?
I mean, it's not our duty. You know, I think that we report what we get, and I think we're going to have a pretty good story about this in the next few days.
Yeah.
And we don't report fake numbers. So, you know, people like to blame the media for the world's ills. And it's like there are irresponsible media members out there that post things that they shouldn't post or make things up or do things to get retweets. And, you know, we work at a place where, you know, we try to do it responsibly. And it's hard. And we've talked about this. It's really hard to get people to give up numbers and to show proof of those numbers. So when you can't get proof or they refuse to give you the contracts or whatever comes into play, you know, we don't put numbers out there. We can speculate. We can get a feel for it based on, you know, things that are happening, but there's no concrete numbers. And I think that the real lesson here, Mitch, and I'm not a very political person, okay?
I don't
know anything about politics.
I won't expose you by some of the questions you've asked me.
Yeah, but the little I do know is that if you are on one side of the coin from a political standpoint, you tend to consume media that has a slant towards your views already. And if you're on the other side, you do another media outlet that reports it in a way that you want to hear it. And the thing that I don't understand about human nature is the whole entire purpose of journalism is to inform, right? And the entire purpose of consuming news articles or television is to become informed. And something has happened in our society, not in sports and not in politics, but just in everywhere. People only want to read what they already think. And I think that's part of the reason why fan sites have been so successful, because people want to read from an angle and a slant that makes what they think or who they root for look positive, the same way that certain websites have benefited financially quite well from reporting news stories about current events that make your side of the political spectrum look good. And like, if I were in the way that I try to do it is to read reliable and trustworthy news sources. And it might be harder in politics than it is in other places, and try to learn about what is happening and what is fact, and then make my own decision about how I'm supposed to handle it or feel about it, rather than just relying on somebody to tell me what I want to think or what I want to believe. And I think that's the number one problem in journalism. And I think that it's a more of a rampant issue in the political space. But certainly it has crept into the sports world, because people read things from their slant and they perceive that to be true. And they read The Athletic and they think that we're haters of their program because we're writing facts and not the propaganda. And then it all gets really messy. So that was a long rant, but the moral of the story here is be careful what you're reading, and not everything you read on the internet is true.
Amen.
And yes, always be aware of who you're reading and what you're reading and what the website is and who's writing it and where it's being produced, the background of the person writing it. You know, I'm not, like I said, I'll say it again, I'm not Wright Thompson, but I try to do it the right way.
Yeah. We have very strict sourcing rules at The Athletic.
Yeah. And you're not allowed to run things if it's not fact. And if you misreport, you can get fired. Like, this is where we work. So to me, if I were, you know, maybe I'm biased, but if I were a sports nut and like whenever I want to read about the NFL or if I want to read about the NBA or consume sports from a fan standpoint, I read The Athletic.
Good choice.
Company, man.
You are. But how come whenever we come on the podcast, I'm like, did you read so-and-so's story? You're like, not yet.
I don't know. I read more than you think.
Okay, good.
I don't read your reading list.
What?
I don't read everything in the same order that you read it. Sorry.
Okay. Brian J., Nebraska's pipeline to Texas dried up when they left the Big 12 and went to the Big 10. Now that Matt Rhule is in charge, he has used his previous connections to bring in a handful of recruits from the Lone Star State. With Nebraska not playing regular games in the state of Texas, do you think Rhule can continue to pull multiple recruits from the state, or will Nebraska need to schedule some games in Texas periodically? My opinion is that once you establish a pipeline, you've got a pipeline, you have a reputation that you don't need to play games there. You know, sure, would it help if they played a few games, and we'll see what happens with the whole crazy Big Ten with the two Southern California teams. But I think if you can establish yourself as get a reputation in a certain part of the country, that you can keep that going even if you don't play games there.
Yeah, I think that the whole pipeline geography thing is still important. But I also think, too, that national recruiting has become so prevalent now that location of the place is not as important as it was maybe even 5 years ago. I don't know what pipeline schools or what pipeline, like, I don't know that Nebraska holds any more weight in Texas than some other Big Ten teams that recruit that state or everybody else who does. But like, Matt Rhule could be a good recruiter and have a good staff and go into Texas and get guys. And like, hell, I mean, they might get the number one overall player in the class could end up at Nebraska this year. And Dylan Raiola, whose father played there and whose uncle's the offensive line coach.
Yeah. So I
also playing away games in a non-conference schedule, like one or two, isn't going to be the reason someone chooses you or feels more comfortable choosing you. Right? Like, it's like, oh, I'm from Dallas and they're playing SMU 1 year. It's like, oh, I'm going to go there now because they're coming here once.
Right.
It doesn't compute.
Right. It would help if I can, if they're playing a bunch of games close by.
Yeah. You know, so like, it's like one non-conference game isn't going to be a make or break anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. And,
you know.
Ready for a little trivia?
How far away is Lincoln if I wanted to drive there from Dallas? Are we talking 8 hours or are we talking like 15 hours?
I think it's probably, my guess would be 10 hours. You want me to, are you Googling it?
Yeah. I love knowing how far it takes. Your guess is 10 hours? That's my trivia question.
I've driven from Nashville to Omaha several times for the College World Series. It's about.
Yeah, like every year, right?
It's about 14 hours, I believe. 13.
Lincoln, Nebraska to Dallas is 9 hours and 30 minutes. You nailed it. You just drive right up through Tulsa or through Wichita and go right to it. You know, it's two states away.
Yeah. So, okay. Lost my train of thought there. Ready for a little trivia?
I'm ready. And I'm ready to bury it again.
Okay. Yeah. You've been on a roll.
My baby is opening the office doors and slamming them. So sorry about that.
Okay. Good. Hey, Liv. I'm Liv's favorite person today.
You are.
How many of the 26 blue chip quarterbacks in the class of 2023 signed with in-state programs?
Ooh. How many of the top what?
26 blue chip quarterbacks in the 2023 class signed with in-state programs.
9.
6. You want to try and name them?
Respectable.
Or no?
I know a few off the top of my head. Oh my God, I don't know any.
One of them's a no-brainer.
Avery Johnson went to Kansas State.
Yes.
One of them's a no-brainer. Oh, Malachi Nelson went to USC.
Yeah.
JJ Cole is from Iowa, right?
Good job. We've talked about one program a lot today.
I think that's it.
Two of them were flips.
Oh, who's South Carolina's quarterback?
Lenore Sellers.
Yeah, okay. From Syracuse. He's one. And that was a good flip, too, because that kid apparently is really good and has been underrated a little bit. And I think that might be the last one that I know.
Another Big Ten to SEC flip.
Oh, wait. North Carolina's kid, Tad Hudson, is from North Carolina. That's one. And that's
it. Did you shoot off the top of your head?
Tad Hudson?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of who's committed in the classes, but I don't know the last one.
Ricky Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Baton Rouge.
That was the best. That was the easiest one.
Yeah. Well, I thought,
So I knew it was going to be low, but not as low as I guessed. I think it's respectable. 9 out of the 26 is a respectable guess when the answer is 6.
Yeah. I mean, you could call it that. You're 50% off.
That's true.
Yeah. But it was good. It was good. I got
it. Wasn't embarrassing. I'll take it as long as it's not embarrassing.
Yeah. You did not embarrass yourself. I got a DM from one of our listeners who said, "We all know Ari's trivia prowess eerily resembles flowers for Algernon." What, I don't know what that is. Is that something Algernon? What is that?
Well, you're not reading whatever you're reading correctly. Yeah. So how am I supposed to know? Yeah.
But so he basically says, "Look forward to the regression in the pod soon."
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, you're going to have to wait another week, pal.
Yeah. It's a short story by American author Daniel Keyes. I guess I'm exposing myself for not knowing this.
You obviously don't read stories. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, that was signing day. Andy and I are going to be back on the horn here in the next day or so. And Mitch, I think next week will be the perfect opportunity to really dive into 2024 and, you know,
and
talk
with
about
Jesse Temple. We'll talk with
Jesse Temple. And, you know, we got a lot. So, you know, another year in the books and another year's beginning. They all blend together. Recruiting never stops. This podcast is never going to stop. Hopefully you never stop listening. We will catch you guys next week.